In this episode, we're going to have Genevieve on again, and we're having a bit of a first home buyer's update session. Hey, Jel, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good.
Hey, you're listening to My Millennial Money. It's the podcast where one of the presenters is actually a socialist. Can you pick which one?
Do you guys remember that intro, the socialist one? Remember how we did a heap of episodes at the start and we had to ditch them because they were an absolute train wreck, worse than
the ones that we
get one star
that
from.
We do now.
Anyway, so we had that socialist intro and I went on some rant trying to, like, I don't know, it was a train wreck, but I thought I'd leave it in there.
That's
so I think I said something like, so what's it like to be a socialist, John?
Lifted some hairs on people's backs, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. The three of us that were there. So, how's everyone going today?
I'm good.
Yeah.
How are you guys?
How are you?
Yeah. Oh, I'm pretty good, you know, trying to survive in this crazy life. But remember, I just wanted to welcome anyone who's a new listener of the show. Thanks for having us in your ears. And to the fam who's listening, our crew, our cult, our... Can you say cult? Should we? No, we don't want a cult, do we?
Nah.
Cult following?
Nah. Yeah,
that's cult pretty following. Cool.
Yeah, yeah, sweet. Hello to everybody who's been with us on the journey. And we're getting a whole heap of reviews and it's been really fun.
Some five stars, some one star.
It's all or nothing, isn't it?
It is.
Everyone's there's got
no,
an opinion.
There's no threes.
I know. Well, there's a couple, but it's just like, gosh. Do you want to read a couple of reviews, Aaron?
So I'll read Juicy John Rambo's five-star review. That's an awesome name. This podcast is a perfect blend of information and wit and has a great range of topics for maneuvering through millennial money with mindfulness.
Jeez, so much zen in that.
So much M's in there.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a tongue twister.
Totally. And what about this other one from Lara1245673?
I wish this was better.
Oh, wait. What's the... How many stars did Lara give us?
One, if that. If there was a half, I'm sure it'd be a half. I wish this was better as I really wanted to find a good Aussie financial podcast, but it badly needs editing. Talking about whose phone is going off or repeatedly saying that you should have closed the front door before recording started is just really boring for your audience. And it's possible for hosts to have banter between themselves and have it be both funny and for the audience and on topic, but that's not what's happening here. Hoping these issues are addressed in later episodes.
And if Lara could have a sound, she would probably be doing...
Yeah, she's not digging it.
So thanks for listening in, Lara.
Yeah, and this is the funny thing, right? Like, we had so many episodes that we'd record... We literally started this in my house. And there was one episode where I left the front door open.
I was going to say, I only remember that happening once.
It was once, yeah. But thanks for listening because it wasn't at the start of the episode, so she was deep.
Okay.
Yeah, so thanks.
Well, thanks for getting deep.
Yeah.
There was a harem of people waiting at the in the lounge room for Glenn.
I know, it was crazy.
Were they your supporters?
No, it was the front. I think there was a plane or something outside and you could hear it through the front door.
Or the dog. I remember you making comments about the dog.
Oh, the dog. And but I have learned with my house, because remember I went to China and I left my house unlocked and I got broken into.
Yep. Remember that. And all your stuff got stolen. Remember that too.
Yeah.
It's not really broken into when you leave the door open.
No, but it's... I was emotionally broken into. All right. So... So our main connection point is Instagram at My Millennial Money and our Facebook group, which you can join. And on the way in, we ask people what's like a number one question that you have. And a lot of the time, people say, and Beck wrote, her issue is that I won't have enough / the lifestyle of my parents. So that's a common theme with people not wanting to be like their parents. So, like, if there's one thing you would say, John, what, like...
Yeah, I read an interesting article about this on the weekend, and it was twofold. It was not wanting to end up like their parents, as in, I want to create more wealth or a better lifestyle in retirement. But there was the other end where I can see... My parents are well set up. How can I afford to get into the property market knowing what they paid for their property 30 years ago.
Mm.
So there's, yeah, everyone's different in that sense, but it's...
So I don't know, and Jill, just jump in with anything. So Jill, we're going to chat about first home buyers in a moment, but I just wanted to answer a couple of questions and comments. Like, I was thinking on the way to here this morning, what are two things that you could do to not be like your parents? I think the number one thing would be to take risks, calculated risks, whether that's with your career, with your work, with anything. Because you got to remember, a lot of our parents, they grew up with like interest rates being close to 20%, which is nuts, right? And a lot of it was you just got to keep a job. And I think ever since I was born, Australia has only been in economic growth. So it's been the good times and it's allowed me to take risks. But I guess if you want to be, if you don't want to do what your parents did or end up like your parents, do the opposite of what they did.
Yeah, it's right. It's about taking action in any area of your life where you feel you need to create some traction or get a better result, right?
Totally.
I think, as you said about economic growth, it's been fantastic in the last 20-odd years. However, it's not going to remain forever. And the old Warren Buffett theory of doing what everyone else isn't doing probably resonates here, isn't it? Like in the last 6 or 12 months, and Genevieve's going to talk about it, lending's tightened and Royal Commission and everything else. It's most of the country, or a lot more of the country now, are sitting on their hands saying, well, I wonder how this will play out.
Totally.
Whereas the savvy and the, I suppose, the guys who and girls who want to take action are actually doing that right now.
Totally. And I think another thing that that I see my financial planning clients with, a lot of clients that are in their 60s, a lot of them are still carrying personal debt.
Yeah, so right.
Car loans, personal loans, credit cards, and they just can't shake it. Mm-hmm. And I think the number one thing is because they've just, for whatever reason, got into a debt cycle and have never been able to get out
of it. To get out, yeah.
So if I'm looking at, so what do I want to do today to not be like my parents financially? It's got to be complete opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's continually upgrading their debt in a lot of cases, isn't it?
Totally.
So they've had that car loan at age 25 and then that car loan next time round is bigger and better again.
Totally.
It just goes on.
And I think the thing I would say is take risks. If you don't want to be like your parents, they grew up in a time where it's like you could not take risks because you just had to keep your job.
Yeah.
You had to, you finish school, get an education, and, you know, how many people have, you know, grandparents and parents have worked at the same job for 30 years?
Yeah.
You know, that's gone now.
I mean, that's completely different these days.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And there was another question that Nick wrote in the Facebook group today because, you know, as at an hour ago, we didn't have an episode planned because...
Oh, really?
I just had... I don't know. I was slept in and, you know, what it's like.
He didn't go for his morning run.
Yeah. effective budgeting when working in the gig economy. So, if you don't know what the gig economy is, just Google Glenn James gig economy and the first article, it's my article talking about the gig economy in a bit more detail, but it's basically like the freelancing, I do things online, I might do
not
Uber.
Like a steady job with an employer.
Totally. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. So effective budgeting when working in the gig economy. I want to just jump over before I get to that. John, conceptually, how do you and Amy manage your money?
It's a good question, Glenn.
Maybe we might need to get Ames on.
How Amy views it and I view it is very different. No. So running our business, from that point of view, we take a wage from the business.
Sure.
Essentially. And then number one, we know what our personal expenses are on a monthly level.
Yep.
So the wage goes into that personal account, very separate from business. And from there, it's a case of allocating a guilt-free amount, or as you call it, the blow amount, and that's separate each week. And we send X amount to our three kids. So that goes into their three accounts, and essentially the leftover is for personal expenses.
So just a question on the, you send money over to the kids' account. Can I be a kid?
From a monetary reason?
Yeah.
Is that for future savings?
It is. Yeah. So, I mean, we won't get into too much detail here, but essentially that then goes out into shares and things like that. Yeah. So, it, for reference, it doesn't sit in a kid's
Dolomite account.
It's an investment account for each child.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about you, Aaron? Conceptually, how do you manage your money?
Pretty much the same. I mean, I don't have a business, so I just get a fortnightly wage.
Yep.
Same thing. Everything's paid out first, whatever's left over. My son does banking. Mace, not so good with her.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Jill, do you have a system?
Yeah. So, wages go into the one account, and then we have direct debits within 24 hours of our pay, where it allocates everything out, and whatever's left in that account is our expenses for the fortnight.
Yep.
And we try and use that, if not less than that.
Yeah, sweet. So I guess what I wanted to establish was, and I'll say the same way I do it, I've got one account called, and if you've done the spending plan course that we offer, it's a cash hub. All money goes into that. Mm-hmm. We know how much it costs us to exist.
Yep.
And then each week, money goes out. So having that said, whether you run a business or you're an employee,
mm-hmm.
don't get confused. You've got to manage your money the same way.
Yeah.
Like, and a lot of people that are small business owners.
I mean, it essentially is the same. Like, you would draw the same amount fortnightly or weekly or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I do. I pay myself
out of four to five
financial every fortnight. And then that goes into my personal account.
Yep.
And then I set up my personal account and use my Blow account. So I guess what I'm saying is, if you are working in the gig economy, it means you may have three sources of income, right?
Yeah. And irregular.
Irregular as well.
Yeah.
So you may do Uber. You may do online graphic design.
Yep.
You may, I don't know. What else would you do in the gig economy?
Be a babysitter.
Like
walk dogs.
Yeah. Walk dogs.
Be a musician or something. Yeah. You know, getting like gigs on weekends.
Anything.
And, yeah.
So that doesn't change the fact that you've got food, entertainment, bills, rent, mortgages, like whatever.
It must make it harder though.
Yeah, it does. But I hypothesize that if you know how much it costs you to exist, even if you use my spending plan spreadsheet, work out a system.
Yep.
So all money that you receive goes into the one cash hub.
Yep.
And the first thing that you can do is have a Blow account that transfers a set amount every week from that account over to your Blow account, because you want to create regular income for yourself.
Yep.
And the first and the best way to do that is to have a system that transfers money from a cash hub account to a separate bank account that's just for your day-to-day Blow account.
Yeah.
So
I think, as you said, number one, it's critical that we know what it costs us to exist in our personal lives, separate from our business. But the exciting thing about being a business owner or being in the gig economy, as a reference, is anything more than that is cream that you can go and invest with.
Totally.
Future wealth.
So to be honest, I personally don't do that much savings in my own name.
Mm.
It usually just stays in the business. And if I need to bring money home for stuff, I'll do that. But the more I run my personal finances is just to have that system automated and set up. Now, another way that you may not have thought about, Nick, when you're working in the gig economy, if you somehow work out what it costs you for your fixed expenses,
mm-hmm.
so rent, phone bill, electricity bill, all that stuff, your Blow account, so fuel, entertainment, cafes, eating out, savings, or anything else, break it down to like a weekly or a fortnightly thing.
Yep.
And work out the percentages of each one, and every time you get paid a lump sum, split it up as a percentage into those accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to me, that's a little bit more messy and tricky. I'd prefer just to have all money going into a cash hub randomly, and then I've got the consistent money coming out because, you know, the more automated, the better, right?
Yeah.
So there's no real system that you just got to find a way that works for you, and that stands the test of time, that you can get a constant structure and automation.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I had a client a few weeks ago getting caught up in the whole credit card cycles and missing payments, and the credit card's free money concept wasn't working for them. So they actually cut them up, paid them out, and reverted back to the old school of actually getting money out of the bank and putting
it
in
such a difference.
Envelopes totally. Yep. For certain yep. areas of their life.
Just the mindset.
And it transformed their personal cost.
Yep.
Totally.
Their savings now is great, and they're on top of their finances, and their mindset is, I feel,
completely
fantastic.
Different. Yeah.
Totally. Yep. And so yesterday on Insta, and it's when you're listening to this, it's going to be like 2 weeks ago or whatever, or if you're new to the show and you've just found us, this could be 6 months ago. Bam, boo, just blown everyone's mind, right? There's a thing on our Instagram page, Money Hacks. And if you just go, there's this highlighted story thing, and we talked about a whole heap of different money hacks, and then some people were like doing... And I said, look, if you want any to add, just let me know. And, yeah, one of the things was, you know, I withdraw cash
yep.
every week to live off.
Yeah.
Because you
I used
spend
to do that,
less.
Like when I was younger, you yep. know, in my yep. uni days where, like, income was pretty limited. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Totally.
And fantastic.
I would say.
And it works.
If you are using my spending plan system and you do set an amount over to that blow account every week, you can still use that system but pull cash
just
out of
from
that
card.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so easy to tap and go. Do you know what the worst thing for me has been? Apple
what?
Pay.
Really? Why?
Yeah, on your phone.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's too easy.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Afterpay.
And Afterpay. Do you still use Afterpay?
No.
Really?
You can,
no, because you guys are too mean to me.
Good. So
we were thinking of you.
There's a Facebook group called Afterpay Obsession or some crap.
Yeah.
And there's like 140,000 people in there. I went in there.
Do you know, I get people come up to me and defend their choice to use Afterpay because
really?
Of you two. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, okay, if you are brave, why have I got my finger in the air? If you are brave and you are listening and you use Afterpay and you see a logical benefit to it, I would invite you to come on the show.
I think we've had this discussion, haven't we?
Yeah, no,
I'm sure I would have.
Yeah, but I want to pick a fight with someone who uses Afterpay, and I want to have a debate with them.
They're sitting right here.
Do you want to have a debate?
No, not really. Oh.
I have a lot of clients that don't realize or they forget they have Afterpay, and then when you ask for a statement or they don't know how to get it, they don't know how to access it, and you would not access your home loan.
Okay.
When Afterpay were writing their business plan, that's exactly what they wrote.
Yeah. Okay. No way to access online accounts.
I don't want to put you on the stand, Jill, but I will.
Sure.
So Afterpay, it could be a trap for those wanting to get a mortgage at some point, because if you default, Afterpay will send you a little ping over to the credit agency.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. And it's all taken into consideration as a repayment on a loan. So if you're paying $100 a fortnight, it doesn't matter what that credit limit is. They take into account that $100 a fortnight is what you've consistently been paying over the past 2 months.
And it's in the bad debt category.
It's massively reflecting on. And it's money management. If you can't afford something, don't buy it.
Yeah. But I want it.
And I want it now. Not in 8 weeks' time.
Have it.
Yeah. Oh, seriously. So, you know, it's really bad. I won't say it. You know I've got a spending problem, right?
Yes, we know this.
We're aware.
Kettle,
saucepans.
I got a new... new saucepan there, like one of those Le Creuset ones. After the episode with Erin Chase about like the cooking and stuff, I went and purchased a Mixmaster. That was $900.
And he didn't make his snacks either.
No,
by the way,
I used it once for mashed potato. I will make some cookies.
Gosh.
And then I got a Le Creuset stainless cast iron skillet.
You need to get married.
Yeah, I probably do.
A dog first.
Yeah. Anyway, I've got a spending problem. And that's why I use a system to help me track my money.
Yeah.
And it gives me freedom to spend if the money builds up in that blow account.
Mm.
So, just in the show notes, if you want to do the cash flow course, I'm increasing the price to $100 as of 1st of November because
So get in now.
So get in
to
now.
To pay for his saucepan.
To pay for my saucepan. So get in there. So, a bit of... So, are we done? Like, do we need to add anything else to the effective budgeting on the gig economy? I just don't want people to feel that because you've got a small business, because you've got a regular income, it shouldn't actually change how you run your money.
Yeah, no. It should be the same.
It should be the same.
The extra part to that, if someone's thinking about entering that space, is to just know how much it's going to cost them to run that small business or that side hustle.
Totally. And it could take 3 or 4 months to get the rhythm and routine. Mm. You know, it took me a while to build my business up that I could pay myself the same amount every fortnight.
Mm.
So, yeah, just anyway, let's have some bit of a segue music. Jel, we've got Jel on the, I was going to say on the phone. Jel's with us in the studio. And Genevieve, you are a mortgage broker.
I am.
And you specialize in first home buyers. And if you want to reach out to Genevieve, what's your Insta?
The Sphere Finance one?
Yeah, Sphere Finance.
So
yeah,
just
whatever.
Sphere Finance, Sphere Finance.
Yeah. Don't do your first
no,
Insta.
No, I won't. Slide in my DMs.
Yeah. there's been heaps of people sliding into the My Millennial Money DMs.
Is it?
Yeah, really? And I'll reply to everyone. If you want to reach out on Instagram.
He's got all the time.
I've got all the time in the world.
He does have all the time.
Yeah, so we'll do that. So, Jel, we had you on the episode like a million years ago.
Yeah, we're now in a studio.
And we're now in a studio.
Mm.
Yeah,
gone
so
up at Cog.
Because we were getting grilled and by Lara. Oh, and I feel like we were joking about your review, Lara. And if you did join us and come back to the fold, we value you and thanks for your one-star review because it legitimately gave us feedback and we've had to fix it.
And we have started editing.
And we have started editing just to clean it up a bit. Like to the point where this crap that I'm saying right now, I probably should edit it out because it's not relevant, right? Mm.
And we're all funny now, not just one of us.
Yeah. Am I funny now? Because everyone just liked Aaron.
Yeah. Thanks for coming here, Aaron.
Yeah. And so now we left my house. And I've got a little studio in my office.
I miss the coffee shop, though.
Well, there's a coffee shop next door.
Yeah,
oh, you mean like walking around the
corner? Yeah,
there's a coffee shop, Flower & Co. You should Google that or Instagram, whatever. Oh, see, all this crap I should just edit out, but I won't, whatever. Good. And if you're listening to us, you're our family and we love you. And anyway, somebody wrote on the Facebook group how like any advice of how to get into the finance industry. But I might just say, if you're a mortgage broker and talk to somebody who might be under 25 or whatever age who maybe wants to get into mortgage broking, how did you do it? How would you recommend people get into that?
Yeah, sure. So I first started my career 7 years ago and I actually applied for a traineeship with Commonwealth Bank. So to me, I...
Which bank? No.
So I found myself liking finance when I started that traineeship. I had nothing to lose when I left school doing that. But I think the biggest thing getting into the finance industry is if you're on a salary right now, you could be on 50s to 70s just doing like an admin role or something like that, but you're going to need to consider dropping your income significantly to be able to learn from someone that has experience.
Sure.
I would probably look for anything that is allowing you to study within your work, so a traineeship or
and that
someone...
could be formal or informal, right?
Yeah. And like that company doesn't necessarily have to pay for it, but obviously it's going to help you get to where you want to be. And I guess my other advice would be, just take the leap, take the pay cut. I went from being on over $55,000 a year and almost halved my salary to be where I am today. So,
And it's like that whole thing. You've got to almost go backwards to go forward sometimes.
Yep.
And it's harder to do that if you're carrying around freaking Afterpay debt, car loan debt.
Yeah.
I like how we got onto Afterpay in this episode. That was cool, wasn't it?
I think also it's a little bit about dropping our ego to an extent as well because we're sometimes thinking that we want that high-profile position straight away and don't want to go and volunteer or follow someone around to learn. But
yeah, be open to the only way. Long hours.
Mm. Start at the bottom.
Yeah, just, yeah.
Learn as much as you can on the way
through. Yeah, it's been amazing. So, yeah, I would probably just say, yeah, if you can get an opportunity with someone that has a lot of experience and is willing to teach you, then just sit by their side for as long as you can. And I've sat next to Rachel for 3.5 years before I was confident enough to come out as a broker, and I've been doing that for about 18 months now. So it's definitely worth it at the end, but obviously at the start it's hard work.
And that's the whole thing. It's like, if you do want to get into finance or change careers at all, just start to have a bit of a plan. Like, it's not going to happen tomorrow, but what can you do to start positioning? And maybe is that like, hey, I'm going to get my personal budget sorted, I'm going to work out everything right, so then I can actually put into the spreadsheet, okay, if my income did drop $500 a fortnight or a week,
can I do it?
Can I do it? And that might mean you stop saving money for a couple of years. But really, I would think of it this way. If you can't save money but meet your expenses and be comfortable while you're retraining, that saving is actually an investment in yourself, and that will return higher than any savings account possible.
Yeah. Some might consider moving back home if they're renting or something like that.
I did that exact thing.
Did you, Jennifer?
Yeah, well, moved back home, and it was well worth it.
Mm. So particularly if you do want to get into mortgage broking, probably the best thing, and I would say this with any career, go and work for somebody, work under somebody, maybe take a pay cut and learn the craft.
Yep.
Because there is so much stuff that you can learn in a textbook, but it means nothing once the practicalities are applied, and you really need that coalface experience that you'll get by working under somebody. So,
agreed. But you also need to make sure it's the job that you want at the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Totally. You might regret
because
it.
Because law on TV is not quite how law is in real life.
And suits.
And suits, unfortunately.
Not real.
No.
Yeah.
It's a good point. It's a bit like renting before buying.
And I mean, imagine studying for 5 years to get your first law job and you're like,
this sucks.
It's not.
Yeah. And then you end up with a hex debt and you're not even in.
And you don't even enjoy your job. Mm.
Yeah.
And I mean,
it's worse to know before that you're going to either enjoy it or hate it.
Yeah. And I like, because the amount of people, and I always say, like, if you're 20 and you don't know what you want to do, just go and do something you're passionate about for the next couple of years.
It's so young. You have so much time.
Enjoy freaking life. Mm. Like, that's what I'll do. And then work out. I didn't know what I wanted to do till I was 25.
Yeah, same.
And I still kind of don't know what I want to do.
That'd be probably the average, to be honest.
Yeah, I reckon.
Most people change jobs 6 or 7 times throughout their career, they say. So, like, I work with a number of professional sports people, and they're in that millennial bracket, as we all are. And they, on their day off from that, go out and into different industries and get a feel for what they might be doing, because they know their profession's not going
to last.
I
didn't even know what mortgage broking was.
Really?
No.
Wow.
So,
and here we are.
Here we are today.
So now that
isn't it funny how stuff just works out, though?
Totally, totally. So, Jill, are there so people who are wanting to buy their first home?
Yep.
And let's just chat generally at the moment. We'll just assume that you've got your budget together and you do have some savings and you are on the road. Are there any major changes to any of the lenders that you're seeing at the moment?
Yeah, so a big one I'm seeing is conduct. So banks are wanting to see that you either can repay some sort of debt. So not all debt is bad debt.
Mm.
So they are wanting to see conduct with that. They're also wanting to see conduct within savings, that you don't overdraw your accounts. And also just, if you're renting, that conduct is good as well, because they can pretty much anything on the list that they don't ask for up front, if they think that they need it to make a decision on the application, they'll ask for it. So, if they don't want to see your transaction listing for the last 30 days, then we don't have to provide it, but they can ask for it down the track. So, just keeping all your finances in order is probably one of my major tips. Paying bills on time, not overdrawing your account. If you do find that you overdraw your account, maybe get a little overdraft, because then you're identifying the issue and sort of resolving it.
I don't know. I reckon if you're overdrawing your account, sort your freaking life out.
Agreed, but obviously...
yeah, but that happens.
If you get paid monthly there may be times where you may need to transfer money for something to come out and you forget, those sorts of things. But, yeah, they're very heavily looking at clients' conduct.
Mm.
And if you're on a decent income and have no savings, then they'll definitely ask some more questions as well.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? And it just goes back to, like, one of the big things that people say when they join the Facebook group is, I hate living week to week. I want to know how to control myself.
So that that's not happening.
It's just the spending plan, guys. You've got to get onto it. And even if you want, like, jump into the group. Maybe I'll do a live video or something and we'll do something and I'll, like, do a bit of a Q&A, or if you want to download the course or something, we'll do a bit of a one-on-one, because all this stuff that Jill's talking about, it doesn't need to be an issue if you have a bit of a spending plan in place.
Yeah, and I think, without giving mortgage brokers a plug at this time, I will, because...
you're a good kid, John.
Obviously, there has been some many changes in the last 12 months, but so much that every bank is very different in their policies, aren't they? And they're continually changing. Like, there's a Tasmanian bank at the moment that I've never heard of for investment lending that's gone to 90% interest only. But the fine print is they'll only take up to 50% of the negative gearing. So it's not all bells and whistles.
Yeah.
But so understanding that, as opposed to just going
and just
to,
like, you could walk into a bank, they've got targets that they need to meet, so they'll submit an application and not look at the overall picture. So yeah, you can come to us and tell us everything, and we might send you away for 6 months and tell you where you need to be before putting those credit inquiries on your file and having to provide all this paperwork for and no end result, which can be quite disheartening as well. So
yeah, totally. Because I think the worst thing that you can do is, like, yeah, if you go down to your local branch, and as you said, like, they're just going to go, yeah, we can put an application in.
I just don't understand why people would do it that way rather than come and see.
If you bank with a branch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So everybody, if you are serious about getting a first home, talk to Genevieve.
That's just crazy.
Because don't let a bank put a credit check on your file, because it's just...
Or sometimes they'll just look at your credits on your bank account if you bank with that bank, and they'll say, oh, well, your indicative pre-approval is this, and then people think that they can go and buy.
And then it's nothing like that.
No.
And it's a bit of perception. I find there's two things. One is that they have some perceived loyalty to the lender that they're with.
Yeah.
And there's too much of a hassle to change.
Yeah.
And the second one is... being able to walk into a branch, which is not as relevant as it was 20 years ago, but they still want to know that there's a logo there and they can walk in opposed to going to a lender that they've never heard of.
And the cool thing is, like, someone like Jill, she can just do it with you over the phone wherever you are in Australia, or if you're in this area that we are, you know, New South Wales, Central Coast, Newcastle, she can drive and just do it on a Saturday afternoon at a cafe.
Yeah.
You know, what would you rather do business? I just made you work Saturdays, by the way.
That's fine, I do it.
Or Sundays.
Or Sunday. Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, don't go to a bank if you're on a mortgage. Simple.
I just didn't think people did that.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. I've got a friend, Jai. Gavin, if you're listening.
Hi, Jai.
We still joke with him that he still goes to the post office to pay his bills. And some people do
that.
So
he'd be that kind of person.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Hi, Jai. And tell me if this is correct across the board, Jill. If you use principal and interest, which is, if you don't know what principal and interest is, you get charged interest on the money each month. That you've borrowed. And the principal component is you physically actually paying the money down. So if you had a principal and interest mortgage over 25 years, at the end of the 25 years, you won't owe anything.
Correct.
If you have an interest-only loan, after 5 years, after 10 years, you will still owe the amount because you're only paying
the
interest.
The principal, yep.
The interest. The interest. Yep. So, is it true that most lenders now are charging a higher interest rate for interest only?
Correct, and yes.
So, you'll get a lower interest rate if you
are paying the principal down. Yep.
And this is really important because I think APRA have maybe tapped the banks on the shoulders.
Yeah, they want to reward you for...
Yeah, and yeah. So...
I was gonna, that just makes sense though.
Yeah, so they want to slow down lending
yep.
as well. But it also means to get that better interest rate and to pay more principal down, you need to pay more each month
yep.
as your repayment, which mm-hmm. goes back to you've got to have your cash flow and finances in order. And I keep so much with personal finance goes back to the day-to-day cash flow stuff because one, everyone, that's the major issue with most people. And number two, all your problems will be solved if you've got a regular income and a spending plan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because it all starts at the shop counter. All of my properties and debt, they're all on principal and interest now.
Yeah.
It's costing me a crap load a month, but I know that it's one, it's for savings, two, I'm doing myself a favor. So you've just got to think, like, if you're 20 and we'll just go 30, make it easy. If you're 30 years old, at age 55, if you got a house or an investment property today, it would be paid off, right? So my view when I buy investment properties, I am buying a future income stream
mm-hmm.
for down the track. So I just figure I'll pay principal and interest. The time's passing anyway, isn't it? Like, same if you want to study and it's going to take 2 years, get started. Because in 2 years' time, the 2 years is going to pass anyway.
Yeah, you're done.
So take action. And the cool thing about using someone like Jill is, yeah, she can say, look, based on your income at the moment, let's do an interest only for 2 years. At least we can get you in the house.
Mm-hmm.
You can manage your cash flow. You said you're getting a pay rise in a year's time. At that point, we can have a look once your income's there.
And restructure it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know there are a lot of good mortgage brokers inside branches, but realistically-
You'll never find a mortgage broker in a branch.
Well, a mortgage writer.
Yeah. A loan writer.
Yeah.
They won't be recommending something.
No. That's right. Yeah.
Product.
Yeah.
But we like even work with some lenders in branches, like we have relationships because they also want to give that service where if they can't help that client, then they can refer them on to someone. Yeah. So
and that's what I was getting
even
at.
Even if you walk into a branch, you may still end up with a broker. But yeah, why not come to us first?
So let's move on and just ask a quick question. There's been some stuff in the press over the last couple of months about, particularly in cities, with some lenders with their investment property loans, basically saying to people in apartments, we're overexposed. You've got 30, 90 days or whatever it is to pay back our mortgage or refinance out of it. Do you want to talk to that, John?
Yeah, I think it come about, and particularly Sydney and Melbourne, where the apartment markets in those cities were bordering on oversupply,
right.
and the developments coming out of the ground were also increasing over the last few years, to the point where certain banks were highly exposed in those certain suburbs. So as a result, they're saying, well, we're not allowing any more lending in the apartment space in that particular postcode for the next 6 months or 12 months. And in extreme cases, they would then say, well, if you've got a mortgage with us in that postcode, you need to take action.
Got to get out of there.
So we can lower our risk.
Yep. So I guess that's for people who might own an investment property. But if you're a first homeowner, and this is the good thing about going to somebody like Jill, you can say, look, I want to buy in this area here and it's an apartment. Jill can actually go and do some research and go, hey, you know what? This bank over here or this lender might not be the best for you because they've got overexposure in that area.
Mm.
But I found this lender here.
That you won't have those problems with.
Yeah. So I guess that just reinforces the point that you really need somebody in your corner to go into bat for you. And there's no out-of-pocket cost for a mortgage broker.
No.
So which was one thing I didn't understand either.
Yeah. So basically what happens is, or do you want me to explain or do you want to?
Whatever you like. You're on a roll.
It's your show.
Yeah.
It's our show. So basically if you go to, say, Commonwealth Bank and they will set you up a mortgage if it's 4.5%, there you go. However, if you go to a mortgage broker, they've got, would you say, accounts or they've got access to all the lenders and they would say, yes, I can set you up in Commonwealth Bank because it is the best or the most appropriate for you and the interest rate's the same as going into the branch, but Commonwealth Bank or any of the lenders will pay a small fee or remuneration back to the broker for them to do the work. So it's how the banks grow and get distribution, and it really is a win-win because JELL can actually say, look, we've looked at four lenders, this one's the most appropriate for you, and that lender, it's the same interest rate, they will remunerate JELL for her to do the work.
Yeah, and we also get paid a sort of an ongoing incentive. So it's in our best interest to maintain your loan, make sure you're still in the best rate. We call you if there's any changes. We let you know if there's any good fixed promotions with your bank where once you settle with a lender, that's it.
Yeah, show's over.
And you could walk into a branch one week and deal with a lender in there, and then the next week she's on maternity leave and someone else
is... again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so where with us, it's, yeah, one team that can do it all.
So there's just so many advantages. Have you seen anything happening in the with parental guarantees with banks at the moment?
As just going back to sort of when I was speaking before with savings, so I've had a lot of instances where clients are wanting the parents to do a parental guarantee, but they don't have any rental history to show that conduct of a repayment. They've never had a debt, but then they also don't have any sort of show of savings. So why should that bank trust that client to lend them $500,000 for their first home when they've never been able to show a repayment? So I think parental guarantees are still moving forward, but they're just a lot, more conservative around clients and where they are at in their financial position.
And with your coaching clients, John, are you seeing parental guarantees as much as before or more or less?
A little bit. Probably hasn't changed a lot in the last couple of years, to be honest.
Yep.
I think a lot of clients see it as a last resort to get them over the line because they want to try and stand on their own two feet.
Everyone's different. I see clients and that's all they've ever planned on doing. And then I have other clients that have $50,000 and their parents are willing to go guarantor, but just a ego thing or just self-achievement, they pay the mortgage insurance. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I see a little bit of parents gifting some funds to get kids into the market, which is great, as long as they...
So, yeah, totally. So, I'd think here's a strategy for us to chew on. If you're looking to buy your first home and you are short on funds, would it be worth the parents refinancing or whatever, coming up with, say, $20,000, right? Instead of putting their house and their name on the person's mortgage, the parents saying, hey, we'll pay the stamp duty for you. Or something like that. We'll contribute that amount.
I have a lot of clients that do that. However, depending on the amount, if you're borrowing in the mortgage insurance territory, which is over 80%, a lot of banks want to see genuine savings.
Yeah, you're screwed there.
So you have to hold those funds in an account for minimum of 3 months.
Yeah.
Or some banks will accept a rental history for the past year as genuine savings. But yeah, you do, I would say, rule of thumb, hold it in your account for 3 months before you can sort of move forward.
But a lot of first homeowners will get stamp duty exemptions anyway.
So. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Or even mortgage insurance or contributing with money. And that's just the point that you made before, Jill, is a mortgage broker will be able to say, hey, for whatever reason, you don't have genuine savings, but this lender over here will take in your rent as proof that you can pay.
Right. Yep.
So, I mean, so I guess there's a segue to like the credit checks, and we've chatted about them in the past. So the credit checks, so you can go to equifax.com.au and get a free credit check every 12 months. I've actually put it in my calendar. Every 12 months, I log in and get one because it's just important to see.
Too much time.
I was thinking the same thing.
Hey, you guys, back off, all right?
We can also do them at Sphere Finance for you.
Sweet.
So.
And I guess I like to look from a fraud point of view as well. To see if someone's applied for something.
Oh, yep. As you.
But with the credit checks, it will just say if there's been an inquiry on the account. won't it? Yeah. So
yeah. So if if we do a pre-approval as such, that's an inquiry, and then if we take you to another lender after that, they will ask what that inquiry was and what that went into. Yeah. So it might just be clients didn't proceed, clients did proceed, or
so if there's inquiries from like Vodafone or Telstra or anything weird mm-hmm. like that, we know that it's not good.
Yeah.
Actually, it wouldn't be an inquiry. Hang on.
Sometimes they are inquiries depending sure. on how much you, like if you're wanting a phone plan and the iPhone ends up being $2,000,
sure.
that can be a credit inquiry. Sure. But yeah, generally those things aren't an issue because everybody has a phone bill and
yep.
whatnot. But yeah, you can get, so if you have more than five inquiries within 3 years, it can be a bit worrying.
Yeah.
So can I, for the listeners out there,
yep.
Genevieve, get some clarity on when that credit check or when there is a hit on the credit check when they're applying for finance. So is it an inquiry over the phone? Is it when they fill out an application form to get pre-approval? Where does it actually hit the credit check?
Yep. So with us, Sphere Finance, so when you speak to us, that's not a credit inquiry. And obviously once we get down to if you're applying for a loan or not, we give you sort of three options of lenders. You come back to us with what lender you like out of those options, and then you sign a privacy form, which then takes you to the inquiry of that application. So you could deal with me for 2 or 3 weeks before having an actual credit inquiry. But yeah, you would have to physically sign something mm-hmm. to say mm. that you're willing for them to do that credit inquiry. Sure. And then that's a hit on your profile.
Mm. Yep.
Mm. So remember, the best way, like the dumbest thing or the, I guess, the biggest myth that I've seen out there is people going, I need to get a credit card and pay it off to get a credit rating.
Inquiry. Yeah.
And that's just the myth. The best thing that you can do is have a savings record, mm. cash in the bank, keep your bills up to date.
I mean, a credit card, like a small one, does show that little bit of conduct, because then if they've never had a credit facility, then they don't necessarily have a credit file.
Yeah.
So I'm not for credit cards and things like that, but maybe a small one just sort of gives them that credit file as such.
Yeah.
But then,
I would imagine, like, because in banks, like it goes into lending and credit, that department, if they can see good savings and a good income and they're only 24 and they don't have a credit history, I don't think that would be a detriment.
No, it's not a detriment. Yep. But yeah, there's so, and that's again coming back to a mortgage broker, certain banks will accept certain things. So sure. yep. one bank will only lend you up to 95% of what the property's worth if you've got a credit card facility with them for longer than 6 months.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So there could be some yeah. strategy that comes into play.
Mm. Yeah.
But I certainly wouldn't be going to get a loan or a credit card
just for that reason.
So
a lot of home loan approvals come with a credit card as well, don't they?
They do. Free credit card.
That's just what you want.
Yeah.
Well, we might leave it there. So remember, you can jump onto Instagram at MyMillennialMoney and you can join our Facebook group. You can also catch Jill at Sphere Finance. And are you in our Facebook group?
I don't think so.
You should join
yeah,
it.
I'll yeah, I'll join in.
And
yeah.
She can answer any questions there. And thanks for having us today. And
thank you for
thanks,
having
Jill.
Me.
We'll talk to you guys soon. See ya.
Bye. To make you, we're only here to make you
go. Any advice in this podcast is of a general nature only and has not been tailored to your personal circumstances. Please seek personal advice prior to acting on this information. Before making a decision to acquire a financial product, you should obtain and read the product disclosure statement relating to that product. Opinions constitute our judgment at the time of issue and are subject to change. Neither the licensee, any of the National Australia Group of Companies, nor their employees or directors give any warranty of accuracy, nor accept any responsibility for errors or omissions in this podcast. Glenn James, Urban Ghetto Proprietary Limited, trading as Sort Your Money Out, are authorised representatives of Apogee Financial Planning Limited, AFSL 230689.
All right, let's quickly have a chat.
Do you need me still?
Do you want to stay for the
Yeah, I'll stay, sure.
Sweet.
What's an after party?
If it was called something different, you wouldn't have stayed.
No.
Fair enough.
So
I haven't been an after party for years.
Well, John, we're here. So, Aaron.
Yeah.
This is probably one for you. Do you think You know, so you're into like royalty and stuff. Yeah.
Like Meghan.
The Meghan and the Harry thing.
Yeah, yeah.
She's pregnant.
She is.
Do you want to chat into the mic?
She's doing it now.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I was working. Sorry.
No, that's fine. So you're into like royalty and stuff and...
I like the royals, yeah.
Yeah. Question.
Only her because she was from Suits.
Yeah.
That's right.
So they flew into Australia, I think, yesterday or whatever, the other day.
Mm.
Do you reckon they had to show a passport?
They should have to.
Because I heard, and I'm like...
Don't they have to?
Well, I actually heard, I'm going to Google this, that some...
Do royals need passports?
Yeah, well, I heard a rumour that the president of the USA, the Pope and the Queen do not need a passport when they travel into Australia.
Hmm.
Who does not need a passport?
Another example of you having a lot of time.
Honestly.
No, I was just thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, their entourage would definitely need it.
Yeah, I was going to say, but like Meghan and Harry aren't the Queen.
No, but they are pretty balling.
She'd need one for sure.
Mm. Don't know. Any case, so they've come on a private jet, so they wouldn't have.
No,
gone.
They didn't. They flew Qantas. No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They flew Qantas.
Go away.
Yep. Normal. They're like us, just
not,
people.
Not cattle class.
I wouldn't think so. I think that'd be probably first or business, one would think. Yeah, and that was the big thing. Like, they just flew Qantas.
That's great to hear.
Does the Queen need a passport to travel? Here we go.
I wonder if they've gone to have a snitty at the Queen's head or something.
They were going to the zoo or something today, weren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they were, yeah. So the Queen doesn't need a passport when she travels?
What about the rest of them?
I don't know. They probably
How often
do.
Does she travel?
Not much.
Not much.
That's probably why she doesn't need one.
What's your... So do you have a passport, Aaron?
Yeah, I do. Here you go. Second top Google hit when you type in, does the royal family knee?
Oh. Wow. What is it?
Just as the Queen doesn't say anything about the rest of them, so I'm going to say they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Pope needs it either.
Let's assume.
Does the Queen need a driver's license?
No.
No, she does not.
She'd never drive.
She's the only person in the United Kingdom not required to.
Wow.
She also doesn't need number plate. How easy is her life?
She would.
Pretty good.
She would need one at her age.
She should need one.
I mean, let's be honest.
Your insurance is void.
Her coat of arms is on everyone's passport anyway. Like, do I need a passport? I wrote the freaking book on passports.
So she doesn't need number plates on any vehicles personally owned by herself or her closest family members.
Oh. How good's that?
What's your passport story, John?
My passport. Well, it's actually my wife's passport, sorry. Yeah. I might have told this one before, if I haven't, and for the new listeners.
Mm.
We were travelling to Bali for a wedding. She was in the party and I was MC.
Yeah.
And we got to the airport and the expiry date on Amy's passport was less than 6 months.
Ooh.
Oh. Good old Ames.
Into damage control.
Whoa.
So the airline kindly said, okay, we'll move your flight, but you've got 24 hours to rebook. You need to, we're in Sydney at the time. So we raced off to
the consulate or whatever.
Yeah. And thankfully, someone from Woi Woi was at the desk and said, we'll get this through in the next 4 hours. So
wow.
How good's that?
Yeah. So that was stressful times for my lovely wife.
Wow.
But we got there in time for the wedding and she's checked the expiry date of everything since.
Does it have to be 6 months on the date that you're leaving or the day that you return?
No, day of return.
Day of return.
Yeah, so you can be stuck in another country if they didn't check it upon departure.
So it's,
yeah.
It's protecting you, really.
It's protecting you, absolutely. Yeah. So.
Oh, my God.
That's
so
crazy.
For everyone out there who hasn't flown yet.
Wheels up, bitches.
Yeah.
Check those things.
So when I flew from Columbus, Ohio to New York City, you know, I'm traveling domestically. I I didn't know where my passport was. I checked it in my bag and I got up to security and I'm like, oh crap, my passport isn't like in my thing. So I went up and I'm like, oh, there's my, and they're like, oh, we don't accept, you know, international licenses ID. I'm like, oh, I opened my wallet. I'm like, I've got all these cards, like, and this is all my name. Like, it is me. And they said, do you have anything else? And I'm like, oh, I said, oh, I might. And he goes, oh, do you have any medical prescriptions or pills with you? And I'm like, well, yes, I do. So, yeah. Basically. And so I had the Somac, which was, you know, my throat or whatever, reflux. I had that. And they're like, all right, give us one sec. So, they had to go and get a supervisor. So, the supervisor came over. He's like, yeah, we can let you through, but we will require to do a full manual security check of your belongings and your person. So I had to do the full.
And it'll be done by Jenny over here.
Oh, Jenny was more man than I'll ever be. But, so yeah, they went through, they scanned my bag and they undid everything and looked through it all. And then I had to get, it's so weird, like they patted me down, like right up into the inner thigh, and then they turned around and they had to do it again. I was like, surely you can feel.
Oh, going, like both ways.
Yeah.
Like this like, way. And then.
Yeah.
Like, where was your passport?
In my bag, in checks.
Ah, like yeah. Checked in bag.
Checked in bag.
Ah.
Yeah. So
he just wanted to be touched by Jenny.
Yeah,
that's great.
But yeah, they always do no male on male, so it was an extra fun. So yeah. Any other pressing issues that's been happening in the world?
A mate and I have got body searched at Amsterdam actually.
Oh really?
Mm. So we were down to our underwear.
Really?
Mm. In the same room.
Why? Yeah.
I think my
did you have marijuana in your body bag or something?
No, my friend just looked a bit devious, I think, so they brought us both in. It was just a random.
That's nuts.
Yeah, all clear.
Not a drip?
Nope. Got rid of that ages ago.
Yeah. All right, well, we probably should go and get some lunch.
Lunch up.
Did you like that today, Genevieve?
It was great. Thank you.
It's good.
Till next time.
Yeah. Thank you.
I don't know how to end this now. All right. I'll just end it.
Do you want to say bye?
See ya. Hey, Mace. Mace. Say bye.
Say bye.
Oh.
Oh, you're not shy.
Does anyone watch The Project?
No. Nah.
They had a guy on last night and he had a NAB bank account and he only had like $5 on there and he went and bought his friend's beers and the transaction went through. Long story short, he realised that the bank hadn't caught on to how much money he had in his bank. So he ended up spending $1.7 million over 3 years because NAB was just supplying him unlimited money.
Must have been a glitch in the system or something.
Yeah, and the only reason that they found out was because the guilt got the better of him and he went to the bank and confessed. And he only, because he confessed, he got a year in jail and that's it. And all the only possessions were the ones that he owned were taken back. So he bought like all his friends' cars, family cars.
Oh my God.
Went on like flying via private jets everywhere. And yeah, $1.7 million. He's spending 3 years.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Wow. A year. I would do that for a year in jail, I reckon.
I reckon I would too. Yeah. I wouldn't put anything in my name though.
No.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So the guilt got the better of him.
Is that because he was like, I wonder if I'm going to have to pay this all back?
Yeah. Well, he just like ended up like feeling really anxious all the time that people would be knocking on his door or anyone that called.
Yeah.
So he went
Well, you confessed. Both basically stole $1 million.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he went and confessed and then, yeah, so he ended up being in jail for 1 year because he was the one that
confessed
and yeah, they only took the possessions that were in his name.
What are you doing now, John?
Do
you want to get lunch?
My day job. Yeah, I've got to get back to the
You ready? Where's your shoes?
Do you want to get lunch, Aaron? Oh, you got to work.
Yeah, I've got work to do. Yeah. Sorry,
I've had lunch.
I might go out to the green tange.
Hey, babes.
Tanned it up. Jackie Ellen.
Go to the tange.
You love a good lunch out.
I do love a good lunch out.
Everything out.
The amount of money that you would spend in cafes.
$260 a fortnight.
Oh my gosh.
But the no grocery bill.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, that's probably my groceries.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, it might even be late. Oh, actually, where's my it would be $10 for breakfast and a coffee.
$10?
Well, yeah.
What do you get?
I get two eggs and half an avocado.
All the royal family except the queen have passports.
Right, okay, thanks.
Shit, we're going to have to do it all again.
Yeah. Oh, it's good.
Right. So when will this one be on? I need to catch up. I have been listening, but...
You're so slack.
No, I do listen.
It will be on not next week, the week after. No, not today. No, next week. So okay. Today's the frequent flyer guy, Steve.
I can honestly say I haven't listened to one for 2 months.
I listen to him on the train.
Do you?
Yep.
Yeah, see, I don't jump on the train. Yep. Maybe I need to go on a train ride.